Okay, people, we're way behind on our assignment with Carolyn. We've been doing Elena Lamberti's book, Marsha McLuhan's Mosaic, which came out in 2012, subtitled Probing the Literary Origins of Media Studies. So Carolyn's been reading over the last 2 or 3 months since we did a session, and she's up like 3/4 through the book, right, Carolyn?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you're up like page at 200?
Yep.
And there's 300, well,
no, it's only 270, and then it gets to the notes.
Right, 260 in this book, 261. Uh-huh. Oh, no, a few more pages. Yeah, 271, and you're up at 200.
Correct.
But we have to go back to page 53, where we left off for your notes.
Mm-hmm.
So, way behind, so we have to get this. We have to do a good chunk today, so hope those who have urgent messages like Gene, they can hold off till we get some of this done. So you would begin with what's next. Playing with form is the name of the next section.
Right. So you said that's where we stopped, playing with form. So is that like form and content?
Yes.
It's a form. Okay. So playing with form. And what Lamberti is doing very nicely, I'm still loving the book, is contextualizing McLuhan in the literary period and in the past and saying that he's going into the future with his probes and glosses. Is it glosses? What was the other word?
Yeah, glosses. Yeah.
Okay. So I keep missing where that heading is.
Playing with form?
Yeah.
Well,
playing with form. Oh, it's a widow at the bottom of this page. Okay, so playing with form. Then what I marked out here was into the, like 10 lines down. Consistently, in some of his books, the probe is formally conceived as a pun. It is structured as a witty caption to immediately convey the psychodynamics triggered by the interplay of a new medium being introduced into a given environment. It is meant to immediately engage, provoke, and plug its readers into the text. Now, I would imagine that literary critics did not use puns back then. So this was a new form that he was using, his probe, I guess. So have you found the place?
Yes. Yeah, I think you might be right. McLuhan said that the pun was looked down upon in the Gutenberg Galaxy days in the 19th century, but there's all kinds of comedians on the radio and that, in the 40s and 50s starting to use puns, I imagine. And so he adapted it to the old crusty book. But yes, it was odd, I think, back then in the early 60s to see puns in headlines. Because the guy is supposed to be serious and he's bringing in humor. That was odd, I think, at the time.
Right. And then she gives some examples of this brackets Joyce-like playful attitude from understanding media. And I think I'll just read out some of the puns he used as titles and headings. Telegraph the social hormone, H-O-R-M-O-N. Now, is he meaning
She spelled it wrong. It should be H-O-R-M-O-N-E, I think.
Yeah, hormone. Yeah, I would think it would be hormones.
Yeah.
The telephone, sounding brass or tinkling cymbal.
Question mark.
The phonograph, colon, the toy that shrank the national chest.
Now, that means the depression, the crash, Wall Street, and making people stay inside and they're not out in the farm working as much, so they get weak in their body muscles.
Well, why did the phonograph do that specifically?
It was the content of the radio environment, and radio crashed the economy in the 1929. There was too much free information for the accountants to organize,
right.
So they couldn't do their hardware accounting anymore.
Right. Movies, The Real World, R-E-E-L.
Yeah, that's a old magnetic reel. You know, the movies would be filmed on reels.
Yeah, reel to reel.
You know, you put them in the projector at the back of the movie house.
Yep.
So, and the great pun, because it is a new reality, nature is now taken over by media, electric media, so it is the real world, but he's tempering it with the pun on the movie Mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Radio, the tribal drum, so we've...
Now, back then, you know, people never thought they were inside a tribal drum. Mm-hmm. See, these are tame nowadays. These are part of the language. Journalists use this kind of stuff all the time. It's where a poet influences the language. So McLuhan's The Poet has brought in new phrases that become cliches.
Mm-hmm. And many people talked about how the radio pumped up Hitler and his whole...
And Mussolini and Japan,
mm-hmm.
and Stalin, and then in a mild way, FDR and Churchill.
Okay.
But they were illiterate, highly industrialized society, so they had a bit of immunity to the tribal acoustic effect.
Okay. Television, The Timid Giant. Now, that's interesting, because... Television, would you say television is a timid giant now? Hasn't it shifted?
No, Twitter's the timid giant. But what he means there is television is a fantastic new medium at the time, and people are sticking old vaudeville shows and movie shows and old entertainment from, you know, before World War II to dampen down the awesome tactility that the mosaic mesh of TV is going to imprint on everybody's brain pan and evoke new things like Elvis Presley. They're going to shock the world. But that's just on the content level. A new kind of content meets the nature of the black and white TV. But TV itself could be used for all kinds of global classrooms. For example, the Moonshot in 69 was the greatest television show ever.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that was a big billion-dollar enterprise. But you could turn the whole population around the whole world into a global classroom every day via television,
right,
using it consciously. So its potential as a medium was gigantic, but everybody had no clue what they were dealing with, so they put in the paltry, bland rearview mirror in it, in the content.
Reminiscent of Roosevelt's foreign policy, speak softly and carry a big stick.
Well, that was Teddy Roosevelt, I think, 1900.
Yeah.
Where are you getting that?
Well, I thought of the big stick, you know, timidly, softly go along in your whatever policy or focus, but you carry a big stick or you are a giant.
Mm.
So it's...
Well, do you know who said that?
Yeah, Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, but that's 1900.
So?
That's the hot era. Before the software of electric world, so you don't carry a big stick in the TV world. Like
no.
Occasionally he would, you know, invade somebody or something.
Right.
And he was a tough guy, a cowboy almost. But TV, you had to be cool. Behind the scenes, you could invade the backyards of the world, like Korea and Vietnam. But you wouldn't make it obvious that you had a big stick.
Right.
That changed the whole... Look at the hard military aspect of World War II in the 30s. Then think of the leisure society of the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different mood because hot radio was so different from cool TV, cool
mm-hmm.
black and white TV. So the temperature completely changed. And you couldn't go around being an asshole. That was later.
Mm-hmm.
That was when TV becomes obsolete by the global theater. And then the internet comes in, TV flips into a hot medium.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they say over the last 25 years. They say the Americans don't like what goes on in Washington. It's just a bunch of yelling and bickering and get some work done. But TV became a hot medium, so the politicians had to become hot and just scream and yell at each other, what they call the culture wars.
Crossfire.
Yeah, and that's an older medium, while everybody's being... in the corpus callosum, neither hot or cool on the internet, and then in the YouTube and Twitter.
So all these designations have shifted many times over the decades.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a couple more from Take Today, postures and impostures of managers past.
Yeah, that's a pun on being phony.
Uh-huh.
Impostures.
Yeah. Tribal community to magnetic city.
Subtitle, irresistible force bypasses immovable object.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that? That looks like Is that stagflation? Is that, yeah, because this is from 1972, take today, and stagflation, Dr. Beter coined that term in 73 in his book about the conspiracy against the American dollar, written in Africa, the Congo, and so you have this odd thing of inflation but stagnation. So is that irresistible force?
Bypasses.
Irresistible force would be inflation, and immovable object would be the new cold stasis of everybody frozen by television. Immovable.
Right. But also, you know how you talk about the bypassing of the whole industrial technology.
Well, that's what radio did.
Third world countries where people jump to the cell phone. No, I'm kind
of... Oh, okay, now saying when McLuhan had a principle, the backward countries, you know, he wrote this back in the 1560s, the backward countries can leap past the industrial heritage that the West had and jump into the electronic world immediately.
Yeah.
But their people cannot, they're not literate citizens. They're not industrialized people. That takes a couple hundred years to do that. Mm-hmm. So they end up in tribal warfare, like in South Africa and all over Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then other parts of the world, nothing, and then dictators take over. So they hijack the latest media to sort of start and enter into industrial trade, but it's a whole different mentality and social structure than industrialism had in the West. And it led to the West thinking the communists were taking over.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the dictators in Latin America, you know, death squatting all over the place. Incredible violence when they started getting electric technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, killing their own people.
Okay, another title, Households to World Shopping Centers. And, of course, that's expanded into Internet,
yep.
Amazon in every home.
Yeah, that would be, so that's 72. I think by the 80s on cable TV you had those shopping shows.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I forget what they were called. There was a lot of them.
Right.
And but then no one first saw that you'd have a World Shopping Center on your own. You wouldn't be watching passively some eBay kind of place that was selling stuff. I forget what those were called, those shows. You travel all over the chip body to find your own stuff to buy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a world shopping center on human scale.
Mm-hmm.
And the real McCoy and genuine fakes.
Right. Home shopping network is what
yeah.
they used to call it.
Right.
Okay.
So, but... I guess World Shopping Center is Amazon today.
Yep, for sure. And
they just jumped to the front. He's like the richest guy in the world now.
Yeah, how's that going?
And do you know, does anybody notice that Ion once last year exposed Jeff Bezos' like psychological dynamic? He's motivated by the embarrassment of his girlfriend in high school.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Ian said, that there was something. He got totally
rejected
or something by his girlfriend, and he never got over it. So I guess he's trying to show everybody that he was a powerful person back then. They shouldn't have made fun of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how tall is he? Is he a little guy?
I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see on Wiki how old he is and what his... shirt size is. He's now age 54, born in 64, and they don't give.
Do you type in how tall is he? Can you do that?
I can do that. That'll work. Five foot seven, so he's not he's a little guy.
Right.
So, yeah, little guys have to, like me, I know. What.
Yeah, you're all little Hitlers.
Yeah. Oh, who's other? Let's look at the other short people. Mark Zuckerberg is 5'7".
Jeez.
Elon Musk is 6'2".
Oh.
Steve Jobs, 6'2". And where did that get him? Where'd that get him, Bob? In a jar.
In a jar at JW's house.
Okay, the last two, the real McCoy and genuine fake. So we're all about fakes now. Everything's a fake.
And it's a battle over which is the more honest fake.
Yeah, I'm a
Clinton versus Trump.
Yeah. Last one, tribal chiefs and conglomerate emperors.
Okay, so the tribal chiefs are the third world dictators,
mm-hmm.
and the conglomerate emperors are the, well, you could say the Steve Jobs, the Rockefellers, the big Western billionaires before everybody else was a billionaire. They're the conglomerate emperors. Now, the chiefs are subplot of the conglomerate emperors, but the conglomerate emperors that operate around the whole global theater all over the world, they have to put on being a tribal chief with American values and prop up local politics, pretend they're a country, even though they live not in those little fake environments called nations themselves, and their businesses don't, right?
Yep, very good. As usual, Bob.
Bob wings it with much genius.
With much genius. Okay, so look down a little ways. I think the next thing I...
What does she say about this? So she says that she's talking about the pun. She says, where puns and word games aim to induce in the reader a different attitude to learning, often touching the responsive chord of humor. Yeah, that's true. I mean, people didn't bring in humor as part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teachers didn't do that back in the 50 years ago.
No, with anything. If you want to be serious, you can't be humorous. That's what was so freaky for people about ION and the way we humorously interact with ION. They thought it was, whatever, disrespect them.
Disrespecting non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the book was presented as a serious medium right up into the 60s, and then it all fell apart in the late 60s. And then Neil Postman comes along improvising on McLuhan, and in 1985 puts out a book, Amusing Ourselves to Death.
Mm.
So it had flipped into too much fun, too much humor.
Okay, so the next thing, look for the paragraph three or so on that starts with the paratactic juxtaposition.
Yep.
So the paratactic. Now, paratactic just means lining up.
Parallel.
Yeah, placing side by side all kinds of short, simple sentences. That's the definition. But that's what she keeps saying McLuhan is doing. The paratactic juxtaposition of the various probes is developed through language, but also through drawings, images, headlines, photographs, hence the mosaic. And she just, I mean, she said this many times, so it's just kind of drumming into our heads how it didn't used to be like that for writing, to put
right.
all these things. And I guess she's still talking about the Mechanical Bride to some extent.
How it was not a mosaic?
How it was a mosaic
compared
to previous.
And didn't sell at all.
Yeah, which is crazy because it's a great book.
Yep. 1951.
Right. I just lost my word, so you
It says, hence the mosaic not only combines different registers, but also borrows from different communicative codes. You found it?
No.
Several among McLuhan's later volumes retrieve a cubistic or cubism Picasso montage, which turns the reader onto a simultaneous awareness of several vanishing points. And yet these books are designed as provocative artifacts in which ideas and intuitions are offered through a witty terminology and through absolutist claims. After all, quote, the mosaic is the mode of corporate or collective image and commands deep participation. That's a description of Time magazine.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The mosaic is the mode of corporate or collective image and commands deep participation. Do I continue?
Yep.
In other words, in these books, McLuhan's mosaic style of writing is either a satirical or a humorous rendering of the very change from point of view to tribal perspective, which he does not truly like. It's not necessary that McLuhan, he could adapt to things, but, you know, every now and then he pretended he hated pop culture. But he engaged. He didn't have to like something to engage them. his likes would just be the monkey brain responding to things, usurious content, your conditioning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm conditioned not to like certain kinds of music because of whatever I associated with it at the time, but I will now listen to that kind of music anyways, bypass my emotional rejection.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, he did not continue that that motif in his the next books. He didn't throw in all the images and everything, and he stopped trying to have a point of view. So that
no, he never had a point of view.
Well, did she said that in Mechanical Bride, he was trying to have a point of view, trying to alert people to the fact that the advertising was manipulating them.
That's a surface reading of the book. If you read it in depth, he's talking about the technique of suspended judgment. There are lines in there on a deeper level. It's pretty complex. Like, he quotes Siegfried Gideon's way of presenting history and said they discovered new methods, and he followed that. So close reading shows a couple of statements where McLuhan's not really judgmental, but he does make satirical probes. So he drops his satirical probe in his 60s books. He, like, the top of the sentence, it says, his intuitions are offered through a witty terminology, like hot and cool,
mm-hmm.
and through absolutist claims.
Mm-hmm.
So a different kind of satire happens in the 60s. He looks like he's being a scientist, and that he's totally serious, where there's a bit more flippancy in Mechanical Bride, you know, 15 years before. But in 62 and 64, in Gutenberg Galaxy and Understanding Media, he's very serious. And it's only when Medium as a Massage comes out in 67 that there seems to be a put-on level as a retrieve.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then War and Peace of Gold Village. Then he goes serious again with the interior landscape with his literary criticism in 69 and Counterblast. But that has a lot of graphic experimentation taken from Wyndham Lewis or and other people way back there. And then he also puts out Cultures Are Business, which then starts to look a little flippant again. But then he puts out the very series From Cliché to Archetype almost the same year.
Mm-hmm.
So he is quadriphenically hopping one style to another.
Okay. But when you said or read this absolutist claims, it made me think of Jordan Peterson and how people are saying that he's making absolutist claims.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you compare the two?
Oh, yeah, he's what McLuhan predicted. See, the tribalism as a novelty in the 60s, in youth culture and in the national tribes, the Castro and all that out in the third world. So this new tribal thing was surfacing, and old-fashioned conservatives thought it was communism taking over the world, but it was a bit different. And so you have a tribalism coming along, and McLuhan puts on the tribalism by talking about it. And people think if he's talking about the Beatles, he's for it. They don't understand. They're not sophisticated professors who know books inside out and that, also hadn't mastered Finnegan's Wake. So he's putting on being serious, and everybody thinks he's pro-tribalism.
Mm.
Later they find out that he's not tribal, and he's trying to show you how to orchestrate it by turning off the electric media every 6 months to play down the tribalist response, which the little man is totally being massaged into all kinds of forms, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So McLuhan predicts by 1970 that this tribalism will flip into a retrieval of neoconservative or old liberal values, Gutenberg book values. And you see American society in the 70s and 80s, Warhol comments on it in the mid-70s. He says something like, in the 60s, everybody mixed with everybody. But then in the 70s, everybody dropped everybody. So the tribalism started to go into a new kind of isolationism, and so the parents sent their kids to private schools.
Right.
They started to retreat in fear of the tribalism, and so eventually it became Reagan's neoconservative revolution, and all these visual book values came back, impossible to implement, but the mood, just like there was a mood pro-tribalism in the 60s, there's now a pro-bookish retrieval. Conservative, business admin, going to business and things, become an entrepreneur, all sailing on the global effect of the satellites. But anyways, he predicted the retrieval of visual values. And there's been fads of it, different intensities, and going back, dropping out of it. Like when the internet came in, people became tribal, but they were war-burning astronauts. Their bodies, their chip bodies started to play with tribal values. Okay? But out of the University of Toronto, the same university that McLuhan came out of, 50 years later comes this guy who, in a way, is the last gasp of the retrieval of visual values. He is a psychologist, mystic, conservative.
Talking about Peterson, Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson. And he's all about saving the West, but he doesn't seem to be aware that the West is built on the phonetic alphabet and the printing press, but he's saving the values of the West. At least that's what he appears to be on the surface. Other people think he's a Nazi fascist underneath, just like they had many fears of McLuhan in the 60s. So as McLuhan rode the surface effect of the retrieval of tribal values, and he was identified with it, the final stages of Western individualism, or Trumpism, make America great again, he is the intellectual, public intellectual version of it, but I think he's really just Bitcoin. It's going to rise up and then crash. So he's the last gasp of Western values before we go into a strange new world that the millennials and younger are bringing in.
Yes, and what's happening now with the Android meme is it's going to have its day with...
No, it's had its day for 40 years.
I'm saying it's going to exemplify, show by example of what it's doing to Jordan Peterson, rising him up really fast so that... Raising him up so fast.
Yeah.
And then watch him crash in a span of a year or so that is within people's memory. Until now, people, whatever happened to so-and-so, but they'll watch him rise up and crash down. But that will be the Android meme doing that, correct?
Yeah, it's been doing it for 50 years.
I know, but it's just getting faster and faster.
But it's finally taking the heart of the Western values and crashing them.
Yeah.
The values, I mean, he's given, just like McLuhan was given weird headlines, misinterpretations, the oracle of the electric age. This guy is talking, they say in the headlines, he wants to bring the patriarchy back. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty strange to have that image, but that's the way the Android meme's presenting him. So
with McLuhan, people thought he was for the hippies and for dope and for dropping out because he would make up little cliches about that.
Yep.
Tune in.
Because he talked about it, they thought he was for it.
Yeah.
But what's his name? I say that Peterson is not a thinker. He's an actor. He's emoting. He's going through the identity crisis of academia and book culture itself. The university became the city, the new city in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Okay, the university institute. But now that's obsolete because the new city is the chip body. So academia doesn't know what to do with itself. So, and I have some interesting stuff I'll read later about what McLuhan said about education, seeing this coming in the 60s. But anyways, so they're showing finally an academic, a public intellectual, go through this emotional thing where he's mad at one point in his lectures, then he's crying, ridiculous, the range of emotions, and seeming to inflame people and be a hater to the women with the pink hats, the billion women.
Well, it's kind of anti-women in the sense that...
Oh, he really said, well, if the quotes are accurate in that article that Sue Bone was in, he's saying they should be, the men should be dominant, and they are violent people, men are bad, and you need to harness them by putting them into a marriage. And they run this place, but they'd be worse if they weren't married.
Yeah.
And so the women would be some kind of submissive retrieval of the 50s. But
we're the drug. We would be the drug that neutralizes their violence.
But that's not going to happen. You can't do that. There aren't any men or women anymore anyways with the four bodies.
Right.
So it's a big felt need and nostalgia for something that Trumpism is also reflecting.
Right. So he's a total rear view mirror without any acknowledgement of the four and a half bodies.
The ground.
And realizing that we could go beyond all that and not have to go back.
Right.
Retrofit ourselves into a man's body. Ridiculous.
Yep.
Okay. There we go.
So we were doing, how do we get into that? The
I mentioned something, and you went off on a very nice quote. Oh, I asked about Peterson and how the absolutist claims.
Was that like McLuhan?
McLuhan used to make these huge probes and claims of, that's ridiculous. And now Peterson makes these claims, but when he's doing it in a sexist context, people now are just triggered by that.
They're tribal people. The tribal women don't like this figure of obsolete Dagwood Bumstead.
Right.
It's Dagwood. Remember, Dagwood's a weak guy in The Mechanical Bride.
Yeah.
Dominated by the tribal matron. So now you've got the last gasp of Dagwood crying his way to the podium to beat everybody up if he can.
And actually, if you remember what Dagwood looked like, he had sort of a brush cut and mild face. He looked like Peterson.
Right, good point. I think we discovered who he is.
Yeah.
He's a Dagwood in drag.
Oh, my gosh.
And, like McLuhan should say that Mae West impersonated impersonators.
Yes.
There's some multi-level going on in, he's probably a drag queen, Peterson, privately.
Okay, I won't go that far. Okay, moving on.
All right.
It's just... going down the paragraph, I'm not going to read a whole bunch, but there's a nice statement here. However, in a way, they are foretelling, the people who kind of criticize McLuhan for, his witty, punny writing.
Which paragraph is this?
You'll never find it.
The paratactic juxtaposition paragraph?
But it's way down, 50 lines.
Well, that means you've gone into other paragraphs.
Nope. Like I've said, she doesn't make paragraphs.
She does. There's so where is this? However, I'll just have to listen.
However,
to
in a way, they are foretelling the graphic novel's potential of disguising serious intellectual considerations as pop art explorations. Now, when the graphic novels came in, I didn't like them. You have a bunch of them. But I couldn't.
I don't have any graphic novels. I never read one. So what do you think of?
Yeah, you have some postmodern graphic.
Those are understanding texts. Those are classroom texts. You mean like Understanding McLuhan?
No.
With the pictures?
No.
Graphic novels.
Well, you mean Understanding McLuhan?
Yeah, with its cartoon. That's a graphic textbook.
Uh-huh.
But graphic novels. I never read them.
What she's talking about, though?
Yeah, she's talking about
what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, not what I have.
Hmm.
No, graphic novels are major things. But where is, how do I see that sentence?
I don't know about it.
We'll look for the next paragraph. Indent.
Yeah, the next indent, it goes on in a similar way, but that sentence.
I have that. So go back up.
30, 40 lines.
Oh, yeah. Certainly these probing graphs. Okay. So the books, McLuhan's mixed media books, The Medium is a Massage, War and Peace in the Global Village, and Counterblast, are often been labeled as witty marketing ploys, weird artsy-fartsy products, reiterating ideas already stated in McLuhan's earlier books. Then she says, I think that this is a way to oversimplify the genesis of these volumes. Certainly these probing graphic text interfaces must be assessed in the light of the profitable marketing strategies McLuhan, the English professor, designed to disseminate his media guru status worldwide. However, this is what you read, in a way they are foretelling the graphic novel's potential disguising serious intellectual considerations as pop art explorations. Yes, she's right there.
Mm. Okay, so moving on. A lot of repetition. The next paragraph in a similar way. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Okay, in a similar way, the playful twist of a word can trigger not only humor, but also knowledge and understanding, as the Freudian slip clearly indicates. McLuhan never conceives the triggered twist for its own sake or as art for art's sake, but as a strategy to introduce a progression of effects leading to a form that renews one's general knowledge. So I like that because it's like McLuhan never wrote a book just to have a punny book or to be witty. He had a message.
Yeah, he was trying to make people aware of the forms of his books and all the multiple forms interacting in the global theater.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to mime, like a new kind of playwright, mime through the sideline old medium of the book, mime the Finneganese that was taken over.
Mm-hmm. And then about 10 lines down, as McLuhan often said, paraphrasing Eliot's idea, a poem works on you while you are distracted by its content. Therefore, form is as important as content, and readers are to be made aware of the structure, brackets ground, containing the stories, brackets figure. So that's nice.
The next sentence, hence the medium is the message. Mm-hmm. In brackets, the form of communication has a lasting impact on content. It's the massage also. Individuals who are not aware of such a process are invariably numbed by media. And then it's the mass age. Mass society produces new media and new agencies to mold individuals. And then the mess age, hyphenated, those who cannot see through the form of a medium inevitably misread and make a mess of its mediation. So, she says, think, for instance, of the perennial question concerning how violence is supposedly transferred from films or TV to audience. It's an oversimplified correlation which is not conducive to a full understanding of the complex interplay among at least three main actors, audience, medium, and society. Violence does not pass from a medium to us as does a vitamin when we drink milk or fruit juice. Violence is a behavioral response to various environmental issues of which technology is one among many. Violence relates to questions of identity, culture, education, and much more. Do you think that we will no longer have gun shootings in our streets if we no longer show gangster movies?
I think it's the opposite myself. I think, I don't know about the pornography part of things, because on Drudge there's this interesting article about the addiction people have for pornography. But I think a lot of our games or sports, they siphon off our violence.
Yep, it's war under wraps. That's what McLuhan said, sports were. War under wraps.
Yeah.
Okay, so you siphon off the tribal aggression, but they don't succeed because people get more and more violent. So it's the...
Well, maybe more people would be acting out. But people, okay, then that makes me think of with the NRA... who want their guns, apparently nobody...
That's tribal paranoia.
Yeah, but nobody in the NRA or related to the NRA or a father with an NRA gun having a son has been involved with a homicide-suicide, these school shootings. They're nothing to do with...
The NRA